Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org. Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. If you ever attended an animal rights conference, or even one oriented more toward dogs and cats, it probably did not take long for you to realize that most of the attendees were women. And I think the same applies to those who are active on social media, that most of the posts about animal welfare seem to be by females. Today we're going to explore gender and animal advocacy to see what differences really exist when it comes to animals and why that might be. I'm pleased to welcome Professor Hal Herzog back to the show. Hal's professor of psychology at Western Carolina University and the author of a great book, Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat, Why It's So Hard to Think Straight About Animals. He also blogs at Psychology Today, and the name of the blog is Animals and Us, the Psychology of Human-Animal Interactions. Welcome back to the program, Hal.
Well, Lori, thanks for having me. I enjoyed talking with you.
Do men and women differ in their beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors when it comes to dogs and cats?
That is such a great question, and it really depends on whether we're talking about beliefs and attitudes and behaviors. So when it comes to, there's really two parts to that question. One is the dog and cat question, and then the other is animals in general. Can we deal with those separately? Can we treat those separately?
Yes, please.
Okay. In terms of dogs and cats, there's not a whole lot of difference. That women are somewhat likely to be cat owners, but that's pretty much it. The main thing is that there's a difference between our attitudes towards animals and attachments and sex differences in behaviors. And so, for example, when it comes to pet ownership, men and women are pretty much the same. When we come to attitudes towards animals, all the studies show that gender is one of the biggest predictors of how people feel, for example, about the treatment of animals and biomedical research and puppy mills and things like that. However, the difference is not huge on average, and there's more differences within the sexes as there is between the sexes. The big difference, however, comes with behavior and what people actually do.
So that's very good. So let's talk about specific examples, Hal. So for our relationships with dogs and cats, is there a gender difference in the intensity in which we get attached or bonded to them?
Surprisingly little. The data shows that there's some differences. But they're not as big as you might think we are. If you look at, take my kids, for example. I've got two daughters and a son. And of my three kids, the one that's always been the most attached to animals has been my son, whether it be dogs or whether it be cats. So there's so much variation that there's surprisingly little. On the other hand, when it comes to, let's say, who becomes a professional caretaker for dogs and cats, and here we had a really interesting thing that's happened in the veterinary profession. It used to be 30 years ago, 95% of veterinarians were men. Now, over 85% of veterinary school students are women. So there's been this enormous change in people that go into veterinary medicine as a profession.
So handling basic tasks like feeding or bringing them to the vet, or buying toys, treats, or food. So does that mean that women tend to do that more often than men?
I have asked veterinarians about that. You know, are your clients more likely to be women than men, or vice versa? And they have all told me the same thing, that it's usually, say if it's a family, if it's a couple, it's usually the woman that takes the animal to the vet. I don't have empirical data on that, but I've asked a bunch of veterinarians about that, and they've all universally agreed with that.
And how about people liking to dress up their dogs and cats and other companion animals in costumes for all sorts of occasions? Do women inflict that sort of torture more often than men?
I'm sure. You know, I've never seen a study on that, but I would bet a lot of money that you're absolutely right.
And we all know the phrase, the crazy cat lady, which could be a peculiar woman whose life revolves around her cats, but there really is no equivalent for men, is there?
Well, can we extend that and talk about hoarding?
Yes, I was going to get to that, but absolutely.
Okay. Let's talk about, let's sort of do a digression here and talk about animal abuse. I said that there really wasn't much gender differences in attitudes towards animals, but there's a huge difference when it comes to abusing animals. And well over 95% of people accused of crimes involving animal abuse are men. Men are more likely to do the really nasty things to animals, vastly more likely, 20 times more likely than women. On the other hand, there's one form of abuse that women are more frequent than men, and that's when it comes to hoarding. And so there's the stereotype of the crazy cat lady isn't completely a stereotype, an untrue stereotype. There is some truth to that. About 70 or 80% of animal hoarders tend to be are women. And the unfortunate thing about this is that from an animal's point of view, hoarding can be a particularly long-lasting form of animal cruelty. So, you know, in a way, it's an interesting disorder because in a way, it's a disorder of loving animals too much that people completely lose perspective. And the next thing you know that they're, you know, they've got 30 or 40 cats living in their house and, you know, in horrible, in horrific conditions. I won't go into details.
Yeah. And Hal, going back to my intro, are my observations correct about the gender of people who attend animal rights and animal welfare conferences, that most of them are indeed women?
It's absolutely true, and it's striking. You know, I go to animal rights conferences, I go to animal protection organization meetings, and I've actually done, my students and I have done surveys at animal rights protests, and we find, and other people have found, that roughly 80% of animal activists, the people that show up to demonstrations and meetings, are women. Women are also by far the biggest contributors to organizations like PETA or the Humane Society of the United States. So when it comes to actually doing things to helping animals, women are hugely more involved in it. And the thing that's interesting about this is, whereas, for example, we've seen a change in the veterinary profession becoming more, you know, more female, this preponderance of women in animal rights organizations has remained the same since the 1870s, when these organizations were first becoming started. So women have always been more involved in the animal rights movement, animal protection movement, than men.
And why do you think that is, Hal?
That's a tough one. And I suspect that there's an interplay between biology and psychology and culture on this. But I think there is some evidence of a biological root. You know, when people talk about their animals as it's their children, they're basically saying this is the result of some sort of maternal instinct. And we have some data now that's true. For example, functional MRI studies where you look at people's brains light up, see what parts of their brains are active when you put them in an MRI machine. Several studies have now shown that when you show women pictures of cute kids and a recent study, cute animals, is that the same part of their brain lights up as we see, it's the brain's reward center. So it's the same part of your brain lights up when you get an A on the test or something good happens to you or you take cocaine. So you get this little hint of pleasure, this little hit of dopamine. And there's also some recent studies that show that the so-called love hormone, oxytocin, kicks into play when we interact with our pets. At least one study has shown that this is more of a phenomenon in women than it is in men. So I think there may be a biological basis to some extent for this preponderance of women being involved deeply in care for animals.
Yeah, and how about volunteering at shelters? Do more women tend to volunteer at shelters than men?
Absolutely. I've interviewed shelter trainers, and not shelter trained, you know, shelter operators, and they're definitely more likely to be involved in that. It's other things too. For example, I was at the National Zoo a couple of years ago, and I was struck by the fact that most of the keepers in the primate facility at the zoo seemed to be women. And I asked one of the keepers, and she counted them up, and I think, gosh, there was something like, there was over a dozen keepers, and I think every one of them was a woman. And we're also seeing this in research in this area. At the last conference at the International Society for Anthrozoology, the people that, these are the researchers that do what I do, study human-animal interactions, 75% of the addresses at the paper were given by women. And I talked to graduate students recently at Canisius College. They have a program in anthrozoology. And I think there were about 30 people in attendance, and all of them but two were women. So women are definitely drawn to this field of study. They're definitely drawn to animal protection in a whole variety of roles.
Very good. Don't go away. More with Professor Hal Herzog right after the...
As temperatures climb, please remember to never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute on a warm day with the windows cracked and in the shade. The temperature inside a car can climb up in a matter of minutes, and it's enough to kill your pet. If you love your pet, leave them at home or with someone you trust. Keep them cool, comfortable, and alive. And if you see a dog or other pet in a car, you may only have a moment to save their life. Here are a couple of steps that you should remember. Make an announcement in the store or business the car is parked nearest to, and call the police department or animal control right away. Remember, it only takes a minute or two on a hot day to kill an animal left inside a car. Your swift action can save a life. Dogs are unable to cool themselves the way people can. Never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at aianimals.org. That's the letter A, aianimals.org.
If you're like most people, you have lots of plans. A financial plan, an eating plan, an exercise plan, a career plan. You also need a plan for the care of your pets when you're no longer able to provide it. Every day, animals are sent to shelters, terrified and confused, or they're euthanized because their owners have become incapacitated or died. Some people don't give the future a thought. Others assume family members will care for their pets. A better way is to name caregivers and provide detailed instructions about your pal's feeding, play, social, and health care needs. But even family and designated caregivers don't guarantee that pets will have a home. Good intentions sometimes take a backseat to life's realities, such as a new spouse who doesn't like animals, a sudden desire to travel the world, or the adoptive caregiver's own infirmity. A legally enforceable pet trust offers the only assurance that your assets will be used as you wish to provide for the comfort and care of cherished animal companions. More than 40 states recognize pet trusts. Check with your attorney, accountant, or state legislator to see if yours does and how to create one. Animals Today urges you to plan for your pet's lifelong well-being. Take steps today so he or she doesn't risk becoming yet another sad shelter statistic.
Here's the problem. You're driving in the car, you don't feel secure. You don't have a gun in the glove compartment, but you want some personal security. The solution? The rechargeable flashlight stun gun. You heard me right. A beautiful black flashlight with a polyester sheath and a belt loop. It's gorgeous. It's military grade. It has a great light. But here's the kicker. It also has a 300,000-volt stun gun built right at the tip. Now you have security. Now you have security. We walk in the dog. You're out and about. Somebody comes up to the window of your car. You know in your glove compartment, you not only have a great rechargeable flashlight, but you've got a 300,000-volt stun gun to go. And it's rechargeable. No batteries required. You'll always have it ready to charge, ready to go, to give you personal security, to move your light. Give it to a kid in college. Give it to your daughter. Give it to your wife. Everybody should have a rechargeable flashlight 300,000-volt stun gun. How much does it cost? $59.99. You can get yours for $59.99 by calling 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Go to mycoolgadgets.com. It's GADGETS.com. Mycoolgadgets.com. You heard me right. A rechargeable flashlight with a 300,000-volt stun gun built in the end. But hang on. If you act right now, not later, we won't give you one rechargeable flashlight stun gun. We'll give you two of them. You heard me right. Now they're $30 a piece. 1-888-877-0490. Call us now. 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. Buy one, get a second one for free. Rechargeable flashlight with a 300,000-volt stun gun to go, baby. Go to mycoolgadgets.com or call 1-888-877-0490. Call now.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm speaking with Professor Hal Herzog about gender and animal advocacy and the differences there. Hal, here's another controversial area. Do women oppose research testing on animals more than men?
In general, they do, but that's in one of these areas where there's a lot of variation. That there's some men that oppose animal research. There's some men that support it. There's and the same is true with women. Yeah, you know, to me, the animal research issue is one of the most interesting because and you have to remember that my background actually is in animal research, and I do support at least some types of animal research. But that, unlike most areas, for example, diet, the use of animals in zoos and circuses, things like that, the issue of animal research is really complicated because at least I am convinced that at least some animal research does save human lives. Unlike circuses, you know, unlike rodeos, unlike wearing fur. And so even some of my friends that are animal activists, when I ask them about that, they say, yeah, that's the tough one. That's the most divisive one.
Yeah. How about choices in diet? You mentioned diet. I would guess that there are more women who are becoming vegetarian or who are vegetarian or vegan for ethical reasons than men.
Yes, there are. And some of the studies I've shown have suggested that about twice as many women as men are vegetarians and vegans. The whole issue of vegetarianism is, to me, absolutely fascinating because it brings up a lot of the contradictions and paradoxes that we see in our attitudes towards animals. So, for example, did you know that most vegetarians eat meat?
Most vegetarians eat meat. Is that what you said?
There has been several studies now, and the most interesting and best one was a study by the Department of Agriculture, in which they called 13,000 Americans, and they asked them about their diet, and about, gosh, I think 800 or 900 of them said that they were vegetarians, and then they called them 2 weeks later, and they said, all right, tell me what you've eaten in the last 24 hours. This isn't the last month or the last year or the last week. It's the last 24 hours. And they found that nearly 70% of the vegetarians had eaten animal flesh in the previous day.
Oh, interesting. So people like to be, they like to claim that they're vegetarian, but in a way they it's okay that it's still classified vegetarian if you're eating one or two meals a week that have a little meat in it, right?
I would say more than one or two meals a week. I'd say most of them ate meat the previous day.
Wow, interesting.
So in other words, what we do is we sort of pick and choose sometimes. What a lot of people do is they pick and choose what they consider a vegetable or what they consider meat. And so a lot of people don't consider fish as meat. For example, Bill Clinton says he's a vegan, but yet he eats salmon once a week.
Mm.
So this is common. So, you know, to me, this sort of, you know, it exemplifies the sort of issues that I think are inherent in our complex relationships that we have with other species, the way we think about animals.
Hal, here on the show, we really think people should not have exotic pets like snakes and reptiles. Do men and boys get exotic pets more than women and girls?
I've never seen a study on that, but I'm almost sure it's true. And I have to admit, I fall into that category. And when I was a kid, I became absolutely fascinated with reptiles. And my parents were very good at indulging my interest in reptiles. And so I was a snake collector. I had snakes. I actually, you know, but I became an adult. I went to graduate school. I wound up becoming an animal behaviorist. And I studied snakes and reptiles. I studied alligators and crocodiles, and I developed the first personality test for snakes.
Hmm.
So, you know, the you know what the most popular pet is in the United States?
A snake?
No.
Okay. Dog?
No. Tropical fish. There's more tropical fish, vastly more tropical fish than dogs and cats in the United States. And so the question is why? You know, when people say, there's a lot of times people will say, why do you love your pet? And they'll say it gives you unconditional love. Well, I got news for you. Tropical fish do not give unconditional love. I think in a way tropical fish sort of exemplify why, for example, I was attracted to snakes as I found them absolutely beautiful. And I also like the idea of having something wild in my life. It's the same reason that I have such enormous respect and love, in a way, from my cat, is because, unlike the dogs that we've had, she's a wild thing. And, I think there's something to that. Now, the ethics of that, I think you're right about it being questionable. And that's something that I never asked myself as a kid, but I would have to now. And I would not keep a snake as a pet now.
Well, talking about the ethics of that, do you think that's the reason why more boys and men have exotic pets than women? Because we just went through a number of examples where you said that women, talking about compassion, respect, and ethics, are more into the animal scene than men.
I think that might be one reason, but I think there's another reason as well. And I'm taking this from Stephen Keller, a researcher at Yale University, has looked at what he calls nature values. And whereas women outscore men on measures of ethical concerns for animals, males tend to outscore women when it comes to things like interest in nature and also knowledge about the natural world.
How you developed and then refined an index consisting of a handful of questions designed to reveal how much a person cares about animals. Tell us about it, and how is it being used?
Well, this is a scale called the Animal Attitude Scale. And some of my colleagues and I developed it. Gosh, it's been almost 20 years ago. And we designed it for one study. We're interested in stuff we've been talking about, gender differences in human-animal relationships and attitudes towards the use of animals. And the original scale had, 29 items. And then we dumped 9 of the items because they weren't very discriminating. And that left us with the scale of 20 items. And although we don't use it for a single study, it turned out that it was really useful, and it's probably the most widely used scale to measure attitudes towards animals. It's been translated into a bunch of languages and used by researchers all over the world. Well, recently we decided, sometimes I'd get requests for people looking for a short version. They were doing research with Sutton, and they wanted a 10-item version or a 5-item version. So recently we developed and published two short versions of the scale, a 10-item and a 5-item, which correlate very highly with the original scale. So we originally developed as a research scale. By the way, there's one item that correlates, for those of your listeners that are stat geeks, 0.95 with the whole 20-item scale. You know what that item would be?
No.
It's your beliefs about animal research.
Mm.
So it turns out that people's beliefs about animal research, the use of animals in biomedical research, is sort of emblematic of how they feel about animals, how they measure, look at animals generally. But what we found was that the 5-item scale, which I posted on my Psych Today blog, that the 5-item scale actually correlates about, against that geek talk, 0.90, which is really high, with the full 20-item scale. So it does not measure how much you love animals, but what it measures is how much you feel about the use of animals, how you feel about the use of animals.
Very good. Hal Herzog, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me. You ain't looking for a hound
dog. Here's the problem. You're driving in the car, you don't feel secure. You don't have a gun in the glove compartment, but you want some personal security. The solution? The rechargeable flashlight stun gun. You heard me right. A beautiful black flashlight with a polyester sheath and a belt loop. It's gorgeous. It's military grade. It has a great light. But here's the kicker. It also has a 300,000-volt stun gun built right at the tip. Now you have security. Now you have security. We're walking the dog. You're out and about. Somebody comes up to the window of your car. You know in your glove compartment, you not only have a great rechargeable flashlight, but you've got a 300,000-volt stun gun to go. And it's rechargeable. No batteries required. You'll always have it ready to charge, ready to go, to give you personal security, to move your light. Give it to a kid in college. Give it to your daughter. Give it to your wife. Everybody should have a rechargeable flashlight, 300,000-volt stun gun. How much does it cost? $59.99. You can get yours for $59.99 by calling 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Go to mycoolgadgets.com. It's GADGETS.com. Mycoolgadgets.com. You heard me right. A rechargeable flashlight with a 300,000-volt stun gun built in the end. But hang on. If you act right now, not later, we won't give you one rechargeable flashlight stun gun. We'll give you two of them. You heard me right. Now they're $30 a piece. 1-888-877-0490. Call us now. 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. Buy one, get a second one for free. Rechargeable flashlight with a 300,000-volt stun gun to go, baby. Go to mycoolgadgets.com or call 1-888-877-0490. Call now.
Tired of trying to keep up with your credit card payments and getting nowhere? Looking for a program you can trust to consolidate all of your credit cards, medical bills, and collection accounts into one easy monthly payment? Family Financial can help you. We are a nonprofit organization that has helped thousands of individuals eliminate their credit card debt. Family Financial will contact your creditors to establish an affordable payment plan, negotiate lower interest rates and minimum payments, and saving you thousands of dollars in interest and stopping those annoying collection calls. Our friendly certified counselors will work for you, not for the creditors. Don't spend one more day worrying. Call Family Financial now. 800-208-0871. 800-208-0871. And if you call today, you will receive a free financial analysis. Call now. 800-208-0871. 800-208-0871. Not available in all states. Not a loan company.
You got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me. Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea. Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS the Solutionist on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You could be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's true reality radio, where you decide and regular American families like yours are lifted one innovation, one inventor, one American at a time.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-780-8280 or go to web.com/radio. That's 800-780-8280.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. Regular listeners know that I'm an advocate of humane management of free-roaming cats. As you know, these cats are also called community cats or feral cats. And we have had shows describing in detail how it is possible for communities to institute programs where these cats are safely trapped and then transported to a veterinary facility where they are fixed and receive vaccinations and then released to go on their merry way. But does America agree with this? How do people who are not necessarily cat people or even animal people want free roaming cats to be addressed, if at all? Well, there's new data on this, and to present it, I'm happy to welcome back one of our favorite guests, Peter Wolf. Peter is Cat Initiatives Analyst at Best Friends Animal Society. Peter, thank you for joining us to share your expertise on community cats and the science and policies surrounding community cat issues.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Peter, so there's a newly released survey about cats. Before you tell us what it found, please explain the background, like why it was commissioned.
Sure. So late last year, Best Friends Animal Society commissioned this study, and it was, Best Friends operates a number of community cat programs around the country and advises on other programs. And this was just it was a way for us to check in by way of a national survey to sort of confirm what we see through firsthand experience, that there is overwhelming support when folks are offered a humane alternative to the traditional trap and euthanize approach to community cats. And there have been studies in the past, and but it's commissioned by other folks. It had been a little bit of time had passed, so again, we felt it was time, and again, it was a way for us to sort of check in and see, to reconcile through a national survey what we see actually on the ground in these various communities across the country.
So, Peter, who was surveyed, and what exactly were respondents asked?
The survey, as I say, was a national survey commissioned by Best Friends, and the sample was 1,000 individuals, which is typical for these sorts of surveys. And we asked two questions. The first, we offered our respondents three options and asked which of the options would you prefer for managing the population of community cats in your community. The one option was TNR. The other was impoundment by shelter staff, followed by lethal injection. And then the third option was do nothing. So that was the first question. Then we followed up with that to sort of try to drill down a little bit to see what values are informing their first response. So when we asked about how when people think about their local animal control agency and how they manage the community cats, which one factor is most important? And we gave them a handful of options here: health and welfare of the cats, public health, cost, environment or conservation concerns, property rights, and then other kind of an unspecified category.
And so what were the main findings of the survey?
Sure. The to the first question, which of these three options you prefer? 68% of respondents preferred TNR. 24% opted for impoundment, followed by lethal injection, and just 7% opted for the third, the do nothing option. And when it came to the which values are informing this decision, the health and welfare of the cats topped the list at 38%. Followed by public health at 31%. And then cost came in a distant third at 16%. And it's interesting, again, I mentioned there has been surveys in the past, and the results from our survey certainly correspond pretty closely with what we've been seeing in the past. And it's interesting if you think of 68%, you know, that's nearly 7 in 10 Americans prefer TNR, and it's hard to imagine another issue today where you could get 7 in 10 Americans on any one side of any issue.
Right.
So pretty remarkable.
Right. And just to remind my listeners, TNR is trap, neuter, release, as I described in my intro, just so people know. Were there any surprises in the results for you, Peter?
Not surprises in one sense. As I say, the results confirm both national surveys of the past, but also our experience on the ground where Best Friends operates these programs. We see overwhelmingly when you offer people a new way, by way of trap, neuter, return, a new way of managing these cats, they generally jump at the opportunity. So in that way, it wasn't a terrible surprise. Perhaps one surprising aspect of it was, and again, the survey results are split in, split by gender, by income level, education level, region of the country, and it was a little bit surprising, I think, to some of us how broad the support was. I mean, there's some mixed when you get into some of the regional data, but again, you also, when you start to split it, you have to be careful because then the sample is getting quite small, and you have to be a little careful about putting too much weight on that. But again, it's really encouraging to see the broad support. It wasn't there were no real outliers one way or the other. So that was a surprise, but a very pleasant surprise.
Yes, that is nice to see. Peter, what are the factors that determine whether a town or a community or even an HOA or commercial property adopts modern TNR practices?
Well, there are a number of factors, of course, that one would consider, whether you're talking, again, about a large municipality or even just an HOA sort of situation. Cost, of course, comes into it. And there's some really interesting work being done. I'm not sure when it's going to be completed, but there are some folks doing some rigorous economic analysis right now, which is exciting. So cost, of course, plays into it. But the biggest factor, I think, and we understand, by the way, not everyone loves these cats. As my director likes to say, whether you love the cats or loathe the cats, trap, neuter, return is still the answer for you. It's the only... even if you set aside the humane aspect of it, given its broad support, as we just talked about, it's the only option that really is feasible. We know the ways of the past haven't worked. So when you really get into a rigorous discussion about this, even the folks who don't love having the cats around, once they realize this has been demonstrated to be successful, it has broad support, and of course you also, as I'm sure you know, as many of your listeners know, these sorts of efforts kind of marshal an army of volunteers, whereas the old way of doing it does not. So once you kind of lay out everything on the table and really emphasize the feasibility aspect of it, lots of folks opt for this. Again, whether it's a business, a shopping center or an HOA or an entire community. And as more folks come online doing this very successfully, of course, word spreads and other folks who might have been reluctant are more comfortable making the move to TNR.
How are the results of the survey going to be used?
Well, you can imagine these sort of results, again, if you think of 7 in 10 Americans lining up on one side of any issue, they can be very powerful in terms of persuading elected officials.
Yeah.
I'm sure a number of your listeners know, sometimes these issues, a TNR proposal, say to change an ordinance or change policies at a local municipal shelter, sometimes this can be very controversial, and for elected officials, it's tough to sort out. They're hearing from advocates on both sides of the issue, and how do they tease out, what's legitimate concerns? Once they understand that there's such broad support among their constituents, I think it's very persuasive. and it helps them sort of navigate through what can be a kind of a minefield. And again, they're bombarded with emails and there's news stories, and it's hard for them to tell what's what when they see that, again, there's this overwhelming support for this option among constituents, many of whom they wouldn't necessarily hear from. It helps them, I think, to feel comfortable making that decision.
Briefly, in the last 15 seconds, Peter, where are good resources to show people how to begin TNR programs if they want to implement it in their community?
Best Friends has some really excellent resources online, including downloadable PDFs, videos. Your listeners can just go to our website, bestfriends.org. And again, there's a number of great resources for community cat programs and trap, neuter, return.
Peter Wolf, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's the sound of a dog whose vocal cords were cut just to stifle her voice. It's called devocalization, and it's done to cats as well. Devocalized animals rasp and wheeze, cough and gag the rest of their lives. Some are rendered mute. And for what? So a commercial or hobby breeder can keep many animals without having to listen to them. So show dogs will be quiet in transit between shows or in the ring. So an irresponsible pet owner can leave a dog alone for hours every day. Animals Today joins with Coalition to Protect and Rescue Pets in saying shame on anyone who would have a dog or cat devocalized, and shame on the vets who perform this inhumane, unnecessary surgery for them. Please speak out against devocalization of dogs and cats. Use your voice. Protect theirs.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at aianimals.org.
Do you got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me. Pitch it. Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea. Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS, the solutionist, on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You can be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's True Reality Radio, where you decide, and regular American families like yours are lifted one innovation, one inventor, one American at a time.
Here's the problem. You're driving in the car, you don't feel secure. You don't have a gun in the glove compartment, but you want some personal security. The solution? The rechargeable flashlight stun gun. You heard me right. A beautiful black flashlight with a polyester sheath and a belt loop. It's gorgeous. It's military grade. It has a great light. But here's the kicker. It also has a 300,000-volt stun gun built right at the tip. Now you have security. Now you have security. We walk in the dog. You're out and about. Somebody comes up to the window of your car. You know in your glove compartment, you not only have a great rechargeable flashlight, but you've got a 300,000-volt stun gun to go. And it's rechargeable. No batteries required. You'll always have it ready to charge, ready to go, to give you personal security, to move your light. Give it to a kid in college. Give it to your daughter. Give it to your wife. Everybody should have a rechargeable flashlight 300,000-volt stun gun. How much does it cost? $59.99. You can get yours for $59.99 by calling 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Go to mycoolgadgets.com. It's GADGETS.com. Mycoolgadgets.com. You heard me right. A rechargeable flashlight with a 300,000-volt stun gun built in the end. But hang on. If you act right now, not later, we won't give you one rechargeable flashlight stun gun. We'll give you two of them. You heard me right. Now they're $30 a piece. 1-888-877-0490. Call us now. 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. Buy one, get a second one for free. Rechargeable flashlight with a 300,000-volt stun gun to go, baby. Go to mycoolgadgets.com or call 1-888-877-0490. Call now.
Did you know that with a bachelor's degree, on average, you can make almost twice as much over a lifetime than a person with just a high school diploma? Yes! According to the U.S. Census Bureau, you can make almost twice as much. Going back to college is now easier than ever. There are select online colleges that provide laptops to their students. In fact, there are thousands of college programs on your laptop. You can go to college anywhere and everywhere right from a laptop. Call My College Laptop and you can find hundreds of programs from accredited colleges and universities nationwide. Start a new career in law enforcement, business, information technology, healthcare, and hundreds of others. Call My College Laptop to find an online college that will provide you with a laptop. In no time at all, you can double your earning potential. Double your earning potential! Call now, 1-800-285-6834. That's 800-285-6834. 800-285-6834.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. If you want to listen to any of the previous recorded shows, go to animalstodayradio.com, animalstodayradio.com, and all our shows are archived right there on the website, animalstodayradio.com.
And while you're there, sitting in front of your computer, go to Advancing the Interests of Animals. That's the group that largely sponsors this show, aianimals.org, and you'll see all the stuff they are up to, right?
Right.
And then also Facebook. You know, visit Animals Today and become our friend on Facebook, and you'll hear the latest and be able to participate in our online community. And I've got a couple of news items for you, Lori.
Okay, shoot.
In Maine, you know, a hot thing has been the banning of pets sold at pet stores. You know, a lot of communities are jumping on that.
Right.
We've talked about that a number of times. The latest important news is out of Phoenix, where a ban was instituted and then appealed, and we're waiting for news on that. And that is the test case that everyone's sort of looking at to
right.
see whether these sorts of bans are going to be legal, even constitutional.
Right. Banning the sale of puppy mill animals from
right.
puppy mills or kitty mills or
right.
or bunny mills, right?
Right. Even the cats, the
right.
bunnies are involved in that.
Right. So this ban would not allow that, and you can only sell puppies and cats that come from shelters or rescue groups or humane societies.
That's how that the law would read in that particular city. In Maine, there is now about to be another proposal for a similar ban. That they only have 4 pet stores that sell cats and dogs in the state. But there is a proposed legislation that is going to make that illegal. The final language is not available yet, and we'll let you know what happens on that. The usual parties are lining up against one another. Same exact story repeated in another state. So we'll see what happens in Maine. And it really, as I said before, the Phoenix resolution is going to guide the laws going forward. In Delaware, there you can get a specialty license plate. This is a new license plate. It says animal friendly, and there's a cute little picture of a dog and cat, and you pay $50 extra for the plate, Delaware Division of Motor Vehicles, and $35 of each sale go to animal welfare. To the Animal Welfare License Plate Fund.
Oh, that's
really
cute.
That is.
That's adorable.
And the head of the Office of Animal Welfare, she said, quote, spay and neuter stops unwanted litters before they start and also safeguards the health of cats and dogs. We know that. So you can get a cute little specialty plate in Delaware. And the artist, he likes to do these. He's won a couple of awards already. So good for him. In New York, another bit of legislative news, New York has banned tattoos and piercings in companion animals.
Oh, good.
And the background on this is pretty interesting. I'll tell you that Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal has spearheaded this legislation, and it was signed by the governor recently. It prohibits the tattooing and piercing of one's companion animals. And this came to her attention when someone was selling kittens online, right? And this was a groomer selling kittens, and the groomer had pierced the ears and down along the spine of the kittens he was selling to make them have this goth look.
Oh, that's so ridiculous.
So you can get your pre-pierced kitten.
It's just online. It's animal cruelty, plain and simple.
So that got everyone, Linda Rosenthal's interest and everyone excited. And then also there was a Brooklyn tattoo artist who was posting his tattooed dog with a heart-shaped tattoo. And he was claiming his dog was cooler than other people's dogs because of this tattoo. So this was a pretty easy legislation to pass. It was hard to find opposition to this, you know, that could really fight this.
Right.
So there's the new law in New York State. Dietary news. Okay, here's another recent publication from first author is Neil Bernard. We know him very well. And this was a meta-analysis of 15 trials where people people started vegetarian diets, and they were followed along to see what happened to their body weight for various amounts of times. And after they looked at all the studies and put them together, there was a change in body weight loss of 3.4 to 4.6 kilograms. So pretty significant body weight just by changing the diet and accounting, and just that was really the only thing. And greater weight loss was reported if their baseline weights were higher, if there were smaller proportion of female participants, or if the participants were older or longer durations of the study. So more evidence of the benefit, weight loss benefit of just becoming vegetarian.
That's right.
Yeah. And here's a fun activity you probably... Well, maybe you know about this. I had not heard about this. It's particularly popular in Ohio, which follows Pennsylvania and Texas, and that is having captive breeding, captive hunting of deer that are raised especially for this purpose. They go on someone's farm, which has now been changed to a hunting preserve, and then the hunters can come out and blast away at the deer. And this is becoming quite an economic powerhouse in terms of revenue generation for the breeders and for the people who have the preserves. And you can go on there and you don't have to worry about tracking these deers. They're sort of fenced in for you, and you can just
blast away. It's like canned hunting. It's canned hunting.
It is canned hunting, and it is becoming more and more popular. And
really?
And, generates a lot of money for Pennsylvania and Texas and then Ohio, which is, like I said, the third largest state. So
how about the rationale and the justification that people hunt because to control the deer population? How does that fit into play here?
That is going to fall on deaf ears.
Right. So people do hunt because they enjoy killing.
It would seem to me that you lose a lot of your argument when you go pay your fee to go what do you do?
And these, right.
Right. So just another walk around the world of animal welfare for you, hon. Yep.
Well, thanks, Peter.
Yep.
And thank you for listening to Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing a planet, the animals. Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org.